Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Probably about 10 years ago, I was telling my story to certain people and they kept saying things like, gee, you should write a book. And eventually, I got around to doing it a couple of years ago with Robert Hillman. He's a really good writer. He's like a ghostwriter. So for 2 years, I've been sitting with him, telling him my story. And it's been like a bit of a roller coaster, talking about the past right back when I was 7 years old with my father hitchhiking from Ballarat to Adelaide and being on the side of the road, being cold, and telling myself at that age, when I'm a big boy, I'll drive my own car. And that meant I'm not going to rely on anybody to give me anything. I'll go out and just get it. Because I was hungry and I was cold and nobody picked us up that night, so we slept down on the side of the road in Ballarat. If anybody knows Ballarat, it's a very cold area.
Can you let everyone know a bit about your people? Who's your people?
Jar Geelong, Geelong, Bacchus Marsh. My great-grandfather's John Charles from around the Dalesford area. And he was a man that spoke his mind. And apparently he accidentally shot himself when he was 47. So that's what they say. But because he was a bit of a rebel and he spoke his language, and they told him not to speak it, they wanted him to speak English, he wouldn't abide by their rules. So they got rid of him. Yeah, so that's the strength that I come from, a man called John Charles, yeah, which is Jack Charles's great-grandfather as well.
Yeah.
Uncle Jack, yeah, same grandfather.
You've told a story which is completely honest, and I guess, you know, at times there was parts of your family story which, you know, aren't your normal family story, isn't it? It's not a normal story.
We weren't brought up in like the Brady Bunch family with a white picket fence and stuff like that. You know, I grew up with my father was an alcoholic, the age of seven, got on the road, like I said, and we went from Ballarat to Adelaide, Whitmore Square, you know, sitting in parks with my father, who was white, you know, brothers and sisters, Aboriginal men and women, and he didn't see them as Aboriginal men and women. They were his people, who I was, and then he married an Aboriginal woman. He didn't see it differently to the one, some other white people could see it. Yeah.
You talk about your dad. He was your hero.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. You know, I remember sleeping out in Ballarat again another time, and he slept on the concrete in the shed, in the back of the shed. We went behind someone's house and he walked into the shed and he laid on the concrete. And I laid on top of him, and in the morning he'd hardly move because the cold that went through the concrete through his body. And I'll never forget that, you know. He was a good man, very good man.
There was a part in the story where you kind of question why your father wanted to clear out all the time from the home, and you kind of put it as a sense of, or some form of, you know, like him perhaps being a nomad. But there's also that thing of, which I was questioning when I was looking at what you were saying around sometimes when you don't have something or something's taken away from you, you have this ideology that there's something better out there for you.
Yeah.
You think your dad was a bit like that, or?
I definitely do, yeah. He was a man that he couldn't settle. He used to say to me, it's not a dress rehearsal, son. You can't come over, you can't do this whole life again. And he didn't tolerate monks, you know what I mean, like people that weren't, you know, that was, you know, talking rubbish. He couldn't tolerate people like that. So he just moved on to the next destiny. I mean, we had the federal police after us from the age of, from the age of 7 to 15 years old. So, and that was another reason why we kept moving, so we could never get, you know, caught up with the police, you know, because my mother wanted us back. Because first it was me, then I went back, got my brother, then I went back, got my sister, and we just kept, you know, hitchhiking around Australia. I've seen every park in this country before I was 15, you know, and, but he was a man that, you know, he just couldn't be governed. He didn't like being told what to do. He was, you know, he was a man that he worked for Soul Brother Circus. He was a tent boxer and a lion tamer. And then you get some man in a suit trying to tell him what to do. He couldn't handle that stuff. So he wouldn't tolerate that. So I thought we'd just move on to another area. You know, we'd be in Sydney at Central Railway Station. He'd flip a coin. We're going two heads. We're going to Brisbane, or tails. We're going to Melbourne. So we'd flip up twice the head, so then we'd go to Brisbane, and then we'd end up in Mosgrove Park, you know, that sort of stuff. and sit around with other men having a drink in the park, and him being white, and some of it could have been some white people there as well. I remember this one white guy saying something about my sister, about her being black, and he didn't know that that was my father's daughter. And my father said to him, "What did you just say?" And he said it again. He was had a few drinks, and my brother David and myself lifted him up onto his knees because he had a few drinks, and he just sort of lined this guy up and hit him straight aside the head. And I remember his eye socket coming straight out the top of his head, you know what I mean? Because he didn't tolerate racism or standover. He didn't like standover people, and neither do I. I can't stand it. There's only two things I don't like. And there's people that are bullies and standover people, and racist people. There's no room for them in my world anyway.
I mean, you travelled around a lot, but a place that seemed to be home for your dad was, you know, the stomping grounds of Fitzroy and St Kilda, which are you know, very well-known places of meeting for Aboriginal people.
Yes, it is, yes.
Seemed like that was more home for your dad.
Yeah, it was in Fitzroy and the Champion, the Builders, the Robberoy. There are a few pubs there on Gertrude Street. I remember going in there, I'm probably 10, 11 and 12. My uncle would be playing pool and my father would be playing pool, and you know, a bit of a misunderstanding would happen in there, and they'd get into a bit of a blue. And they'd work it out by buying each other a pot and say, "That's it, no, done." They were men, no, they didn't keep grudges. They didn't put stuff on Facebook and running down communities and family members and stuff like that, you know. Like that's happening now. They'd be straight up with each other. Say what they had to say and let it go. Don't keep holding it, because resentment kills people. You know, we keep going over it and keep saying, "Oh, you know, she done this or he done that." We've got to stop thinking like that, you know. We need to start coming together. That's the way our family members should be in this country. We're the oldest living culture in the world, you know what I mean? You know, we've got an island that we come from, and we looked after it for a long time. And there were the visitors by other people coming here with their culture and their ways. And then we've sort of lost our way a little bit. We need to come back to the basics of our own people and loving our uncles and aunties and respect. Remember your aunties, your nans, and as they walked into a room and you're sitting there and a nan walked in, you jump straight up and put that chair underneath her. Yeah. I see young kids now don't even notice that stuff, you know? Some, you know what I mean? We've got to get back to the basics in our country and be proud of who we are.
You seem to have had a lot of life lessons, and one person who I thought was a hero in the story was also your mum.
Yeah, she's a beautiful woman, beautiful lady. And I call her a beautiful lady because she was. I mean, she had to put up with in her life of her family not being there, you know. I mean, 7, I took off, come back, got my brother when he was about 9, took off with him and then my sister. And this is a beautiful, strong Aboriginal woman that couldn't get us back. It was back in the 70s and early late 70s and all them, and early 80s. There was not the technology there is today to go and get those kids back. Like, you know, my father was, he kept moving one step ahead of the police. So my mother missed the opportunity of raising her three children, yeah? And when I was 15, going on 16, I actually got back to live with my mother when I was 16. And every morning I'd see her in the morning, I'd kiss her on the mouth, and I'd say, "I love you, Mum." You know, she was a strong, beautiful woman. She had a lot of charisma. She's only a short woman, but she had style about her. She was a beautiful, strong woman, yeah.
Stan, there was a part where you went, when you started to go through rehab, when you went through that time of working in rehab, and when you decided that you were going to, you really needed help with alcoholism. It was almost like there was a point where you really needed to tell someone what was going on, but you were sort of given the choice of taking responsibility for your own actions. Did you actually have a chance to actually sit down with someone and really relay back what you'd actually gone through in your life as a child? Was there that time to do that?
Yeah. Well, there was. There was a guy by the name of Jackie Chris. He was a Greek guy. He was a boxer, an ex-boxer, and he was a straight-up guy as well, like the guys I grew up with. And I met a guy like that, and I'd be looking for sympathy off this guy. And he said to me, "Mate, you're not that special. You're just not a grain of sand on the beach. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Go out there and try and help somebody else. It'll take your thoughts off yourself, and then you might get well." So I told him, you know, my life story, and, you know, he just said, "I know you've been through the mill, but just try and help others, and then that's what reminds you never to forget where you come from." And that's what I do. Every day I do the same thing. I try and help another addict or alcoholic achieve sobriety, and that's why I do my meetings. And I went to one this morning. I'm up in Burleigh Heads at the moment. I was up at 5:30 this morning. Went to a meeting that started at 6 o'clock this morning. Now I'm back here. Now I'm going for a bit of a swim in the beautiful water, and it's a beautiful sunny day up here. Yeah, so I can treat myself with good things too, you know. And that's what happens when you give it away. You give it away to keep it. If you do the right thing by other people, our ancestors will do the right thing by us.
You were given the name Yaramunya, and it'd be nice if you could just share that with us, because I've always heard you being referred to as that name.
Yeah, good. And Stan, Yaramunya. I was at Gallyamble. There's a guy there by the name of Mate. There's a brother from up in Queensland area, and he was talking. He used to watch me every day there, watching what I was doing and all the rest of it. And one day he called me Yaramunya. I looked at him and he goes, "Who are you talking to?" I said, "That's him. Who are you talking to?" He goes, you're Yaramunya. I said, "What does that mean?" And he goes, "Wise man." I went, "Oh, gee, that's diddly. Thank you." You know, like that, thinking like that at that young age. And he says, "That means that you're free of the drugs and alcohol. You've got the name Yaramunya. So that means now you need to go out there and be an example instead of a guinea pig." Yeah? He said, "You've always been the guinea pig. You're going out doing the same thing, getting the same results. But now you're sober and you're clean. You can start doing things to help others. So that's why I'm calling you Yaramunya." And I said, "Thank you." So, yeah, and that was by Robert Mate. He's a beautiful brother from Queensland, yeah.
I think when it got through to that point and then in the book, and then you started painting, and that was the real life changer. I mean, you went through all of that with coming to terms with your yourself and your life, and then you started painting, and it's led you to where you are today.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Well, I had to fill the time with drinking into something else. And I didn't even realise it at the time, but I'm at Gallyamble, I'm painting there on the Friday and the Saturday, and a woman would come in on the Monday. She was the art teacher, and she goes, "Who done this?" I said, "I did." She says, "Beautiful." I went, "Oh, yeah, okay." And she goes, "Do you want to sell it?" I went, "Yeah, okay." So she bought it off me for like $120. Back then, I'm thinking, gee, this is, I can make money from this. And then eventually, I'm realising on my journey, it's not about the money. It's about getting the art and being responsible to have a gallery like I have in Melbourne, in St Kilda. And I've been all over the world doing exhibitions. I'm out there on the front foot showing my culture in a way where people are getting affected in a positive way, because they know about the oldest living culture in the world, but they don't get to meet a lot of us. And because we only make up so many percent in our own country, isn't it? What, 3 or 4 or 5% in our own country? Yeah? So with what... I want to be a part of the 3 or 4% to get out there and show other people our culture, because I'm so proud of it. And I'm so proud of my people. I'm so proud of everything about us. I'll never let no one tell me different. I'll never let no one tell me different. That's how I feel.
To me, this book is about survival and some of the things that you got up to as a young man. You know, people would say, you know, that you're quite gangster, probably lived a life that other children will never, ever live. Do you want to talk about the racism and being an Aboriginal man? Do you want to talk about, I guess, the glorification of stealing and being a gangster? Can you talk to some of the kids out there and give them a message about that?
Okay. Well, the thing about that part of it is I was hungry, yeah? Remember I said I was 7. I was hungry, and I said, "Well, I'm a big boy, drive my own car." So I didn't want to go hungry. So there were situations where my dad was sitting in a park with nothing, and he went to sleep. So I went out and I went and got some money, whether it was, you know, grabbing a handbag or jumping in someone's window or whatever I was doing at the time. I did that. I brought it back to my dad. He'd wake up and he'd say, "Where did this come from?" I said, "I found it." You know what I mean? So I knew I had to hustle, you know. And but I only done it in a way where I was doing it to eat. I wasn't doing it to hurt people. You know, they had a little extra, so I just took a little bit from them, that's all. You know what I mean? It was just like, I didn't want to go hungry. I wasn't born to suffer. You know what I mean? I wasn't born to suffer. So if people had a little bit extra, I just took a little bit from them. But in our circle of people, people trying to be gangsters and stuff like that, we had loyalty in our group of people, yeah? We'd go out, get the money, bring it back and feed everybody. Just like we did in when we were out hunting in the days. You know, we'd go and get one kangaroo, bring it back and feed it to the whole family. And we would never steal from the hand that feeds you. You'd never do that stuff. You know, you know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't steal from your brother or your sister that's passed out in the park. You wouldn't take a wallet from them. You'd be in a pub, and your uncle's been there playing pool and stuff, and, you know, they had me playing pool in a pub when I was 14 against men and betting money on me to win against them, like $10 or $20 back then, which is a lot of money. And I said to my uncle, "Uncle, but what if we lose?" He goes, "Well, you better win because I haven't got the $20. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. And if we didn't win, well, then another story would start. You know, Uncle would just be into it, and then if he knocked the lad out, then he'd tell me, then now go and grab his wallet. So I'd take his wallet out of his pocket and, you know, take the money out and throw the wallet back on him, and he'd go back to playing pool again. You know what I mean?
You know, you've proved what it's like to come from hardship and to show other people what life is really about. And so, looking back now, do you feel kind of a sense of relief that you've actually written this book and it's out there?
Oh yeah, definitely, yeah. I've written the truth in the book. I can't be judged by no man or woman. I was meant to do it. I believe in my creator, Bunjil. So I only have to answer to Bunjil. I don't have to answer to no man or woman. But if you get something from it that can help you, well, then I've done a good job. Mm. If you don't like some of the things I've written in that book, that's your issue, because it's not mine. You understand? We've only done it to help others. That was my motive, to help other people, especially the young brothers and sisters that are growing. And I talk a lot about sharing your problems. A problem shared is a problem halved. Let things go. Share it with people, you know? Be proud of who you are. Look back in your ancestors, where you come from. Look at your great-grandmothers and your great-grandfathers, what they had to go through, you know? It's nothing compared to what we're going through now. You know, that they went through a lot more than what we're going through right now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how I feel. So please get the book, read it, and share it through different people. And, you know, that's what it's all about, I think, yeah.
Yeah. Well, look, thank you so much. Stan Yaramunya, you're a star, definitely a star. Yeah, thanks for being so honest in your book and helping me to learn more and to understand more. Thank you so much.
All right, you have a great day. Thank you. Bye.
This was an NITV radio podcast. For more, visit sbs.com.au/NITV radio or download the SBS radio app.